The following reading is brought to you by the Illinois Radio Reader. Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph, dated Thursday, October 9th, 2025. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, People Unite to Combat High Rent. Forum Promotes End to Rent Control Ban. By Matus Janik. Bloomington. People struggling to pay their rent may feel like they are fighting alone, but they aren't, advocates said during a town hall held in Bloomington. And by sharing their experiences and pressing lawmakers, they can change the rental landscape for the better. We have a bunch of stats and numbers, but that's not really how we make political change in this country, said Diego Morales, campaign coordinator for the Lift the Ban Coalition. What we have noticed and seen is that the most powerful tool that we have is your stories. Dozens of community residents, activists, and politicians attended a town hall Tuesday evening, sponsored by Lift the Ban's McLean County chapter at the Bloomington Public Library. Residents from Bloomington Normal, elsewhere in McLean County, and even from Springfield shared their stories of skyrocketing rents and plummeting house affordability as state legislators and local representatives listened and considered ways to ease the crisis. One of those ways is backing State House Bill 3687, Morales said. It would reverse the Illinois Rent Control Preemption Act of 1997, which prohibits municipalities from controlling local rent. There are currently 33 states with a rent control ban, while only 7 states, California, New York, Oregon, Minnesota, Maine, New Jersey, and Washington, and the District of Columbia, permit it. Morales said the bill would open the pathway to lifting bans with local referendums and ultimately expand tenant rights by prohibiting lockouts, capping late fees and security deposits, and requiring that essential services be repaired within 2 weeks. In McLean County, about 51% of residents are rent burdened, which means their rent costs more than 30% of their income, Morales said. This has increased by about a third since 2019. Morales said there are almost 57,000 court-mandated evictions across the state each year, with about 22,500 of them in Chicago annually. Additionally, almost 26,000 people lived without shelter as of 2024, and about 165,000 are doubled up, living with family or friends because of economic hardship or loss of their own housing, Morales said. Among those data points, individuals from the Bloomington Normal and surrounding communities shared their own stories of housing hardships. One was a local college student who said he and other students are already struggling with rising rents and are in financial distress. Another was a retired mother who asked legislators to support the bill to help her and her disabled son get the housing support they need. One resident who lives in a local mobile home lot shared her experiences with landlords who started to implement rent increases on each resident's lot 3 years ago. After receiving constant letters and threats of eviction, the resident decided to work with a local legal office to file a civil lawsuit against the company, and won. Sunny Garcia, a Bloomington resident and organizer of Lift the Ban Coalition's McLean County chapter, said over the last 6 months, 700 McLean County voters signed a petition demanding the state give back the power to control rent increases to individual municipalities. The town hall event was held with the support of other local organizations like the Bloomington Normal NAACP, Fully Free Blono, College Democrats at Illinois State University, and MH Action, which is a national movement of organized manufactured home residents. Local officials included McLean County Board members Leah Klein and Sean Fagan, Bloomington City Council members Jenna Kearns, Abby Scott, and Cody Hendricks, State Representatives Sharon Chung, Democrat of Bloomington, and Regan Deering, Republican of Decatur, and Montez Solis, who is running against U.S. Representative Eric Sorensen in the March Democratic primary. State Representatives Lillian Jimenez, who is the lead sponsor of HB 3687, and Graciela Guzman, both Chicago Democrats, had planned to attend the town hall, but could not because of issues related to federal immigration efforts in and around Chicago. Guzman, who briefly made an appearance via Zoom, said she knows housing affordability, along with health care, is important and residents need to be certain of their rights. I know that Illinoisans across the state are hurting, specifically in the housing space, Guzman said, saying this may be the time to deliver by introducing a tool to help and facilitating these conversations at a municipal level. In the face of a housing crisis, we can have so many tools in our arsenal to be able to empower our community to make the best decisions with regard to housing, which is why I'm such a strong proponent of lifting the ban and being able to have this conversation, she said. Visit ltbcoalition.org to learn more about the coalition and legislation. And next we have another front page story headlined, ISU to use AI to seek AFib. Nursing computer students join Skills for Heart Health Lab by Drew Zimmerman. Normal. Professors at Illinois State University and the Mennonite College of Nursing are attempting to use artificial intelligence to help identify early signs of atrial fibrillation, which greatly increase the likelihood of a stroke, through a federally funded partnership. This project is funded through the National Institutes of Health's Aim Ahead program for artificial intelligence readiness, which promotes workforce development in artificial intelligence and machine learning, with an emphasis on improving health outcomes. Nariman Anmar, assistant professor at ISU School of Information Technology, said the university is using the grant program to build an AI for health research lab and to train students and staff on the machine learning skills necessary to perform this work. The lab will be a collaborative space between computer science students and nursing students, she added. Currently on the team, we have a graduate nursing student and an undergraduate computer science student, where the computer science student brings the machine learning and AI expertise, and the nursing student brings the clinical expertise, Anmar said. So it's essential that students from both disciplines work on this. Atrial fibrillation is an irregular and rapid rhythm of the upper chambers of the heart, which receive blood from the rest of the body. Marilyn Prason, a professor at the Mennonite College of Nursing at Karl Broman Medical Center, said symptoms of atrial fibrillation may include heart palpitations, shortness of breath, weakness, lightheadedness, and chest discomfort. Approximately one-third of patients do not recognize that they have atrial fibrillation because they're asymptomatic, Prasin said. But again, that's the challenge that we have. And so being able to predict at-risk patients really will be a tremendous benefit for healthcare in general. Some research has shown that atrial fibrillation can increase the risks of stroke by 5 times and could lead to significant health deterioration and death. Advanced age, psychological stress, obesity, and diabetes may increase an individual's risk for the condition. However, Prasin said the AI research is also looking at social determinants, or the non-medical factors that influence a person's health, as a form of early detection. By using electronic medical records and electrocardiogram results, the project will attempt to develop a data-driven framework that can detect atrial fibrillation in high-risk patients quickly and accurately. Patrick Morella, a junior computer science major, said he is grateful to work on this project, both because it gives him the chance to be part of something bigger than himself, and because he has a family member who was recently diagnosed with atrial fibrillation. This project not only means so much to me on like a programming computer science level, it means so much to me on a personal note, Morella said. The goal is for this initiative to lay the groundwork for future efforts that address urgent health challenges in Illinois and beyond. Anmar said the university will know in March whether Aim Ahead funding will continue for this initiative. Here's a local story entitled Honoring Veterans, Land of Lincoln Honor Flight, October 21st. By Olivia Jacobs. Springfield. The last Land of Lincoln Honor Flight of the year is set for Tuesday, October 21st. This trip includes 93 veterans from the Vietnam era. The donor-funded flights are free for veterans and their families. Among the 76 Illinois communities represented by the participants are Atlanta, Beeson, Bement, Bloomington, Charleston, Chatham, Clinton, Decatur, Fairbury, Forsyth, Hammond, Leroy, Lincoln, Monticello, Morton, Normal, Oakley, Pontiac, Springfield, Tower Hill, Urbana, Warrensburg, and more. Veterans and their families will report to the Abraham Lincoln Capital Airport in Springfield at 4 a.m. October 21st and travel to Washington, D.C. to visit the World War II, Korean and Vietnam War memorials, Arlington National Cemetery and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Lincoln Memorial, the National Air and Space Museum, the U.S. Marine Corps Memorial, and the U.S. Air Force Memorial. The group will return to the Springfield Airport around 9:30 p.m. that same night. Friends, family, community members, and former Honor Flight alumni are invited to gather and welcome the arriving veterans. Parking at the airport is free, and a shuttle bus will be available to take participants to the airport terminal door, organizers said. Veteran and Guardian applications for future honor flights are available at landoflincolnhonorflight.org. There is also a flightless honor flight program for veterans who are unable to fly. Honor flights have served more than 6,000 Central Illinois veterans. Trips for 2026 are being planned for May, September, and October. The next local story is entitled Woodford County Crash Kills Motorcyclist by Roger Miller. Goodfield. A motorcyclist was killed in a crash with another vehicle Tuesday afternoon north of Goodfield, Woodford County Sheriff's Office said. Police were notified at 5:57 p.m. of a crash involving a motorcycle and a black Chevrolet passenger vehicle, each occupied only by the driver, at Illinois Route 117 and Timberline Road, according to statement issued by Chief Deputy Dennis Tipsworth. Both vehicles were northbound on Route 117 when the motorcycle slowed to turn onto Timberline Road, police said. Before the motorcycle could turn, it was struck from behind by the other vehicle. The rider was thrown from the motorcycle and pronounced dead at the scene, police said. The other driver was not injured and was issued a citation for failing to reduce speed to avoid an accident, police said. The identity of the motorcyclist was being withheld Tuesday night, pending notification of family, police said. And next we have a State of Illinois story headlined, Texas Troops Arrive. Soldiers based near Chicago. More likely in Memphis, by Aaron Hooley and Christine Fernando, Associated Press. Elwood, Illinois. National Guard troops are positioned outside Chicago as the Trump administration pushes ahead with an aggressive policy toward big city crime, whether local leaders support it or not. More troops could be in Memphis by Friday. National Guard members from Texas had settled in at an Army Reserve Center in Illinois by early Wednesday, despite a lawsuit and vigorous opposition from Democratic elected officials. Their exact mission was not clear, though the Trump administration has an aggressive immigration enforcement operation in the nation's third largest city, and protesters have frequently rallied at an immigration building outside Chicago in Broadview. The president has called Chicago a hellhole of crime, although police statistics show significant drops in most crimes, including homicides. In Memphis, Tennessee Police Chief Sherilyn Davis said a small group of commanders were already in the city, planning for the arrival of Guard troops. Republican Governor of Tennessee, Bill Lee, has said troops will be deputized by the U.S. Marshals Service to play a critical support role for local law enforcement, though that role hasn't been precisely defined yet. President Donald Trump bid to deploy the military on U.S. soil over local opposition has triggered a conflict with blue state governors. Illinois and Chicago are urging a federal judge to stop Trump's long-declared war on the state. A court hearing on their lawsuit is scheduled for Thursday. In Oregon, a judge over the weekend blocked the Guard's deployment to Portland. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has predicted that National Guard troops from the state would be activated, along with 400 from Texas. He has accused Trump of using troops as political props and pawns, and said he didn't get a heads up from Washington about their deployment. The Associated Press saw military personnel in uniforms with the Texas National Guard patch at the U.S. Army Reserve Center in Elwood, 55 miles southwest of Chicago. Trucks marked Emergency Disaster Services dropped off portable toilets and other supplies. Trailers were set up in rows. Extra fencing was spread across the perimeter. The nearly 150-year-old Posse Comitatus Act limits the military's role in enforcing domestic laws. However, Trump has said he would be willing to invoke the Insurrection Act, which allows a president to dispatch active duty military in states that are unable to put down an insurrection or are defying federal law. The Federal Aviation Administration ordered flight restrictions over the Army Reserve Center for security reasons until December 6th. Armed Border Patrol agents making arrests near famous landmarks have amplified concerns after an immigration crackdown that began last month. Agents have targeted immigrant-heavy and largely Latino areas. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson signed an executive order Monday barring federal immigration agents and others from using city-owned property as staging areas for enforcement operations. Since starting his second term, Trump has sent or talked about sending troops to 10 cities, including Baltimore, the District of Columbia, New Orleans, and the California cities of Oakland, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. Most violent crime around the U.S. has declined in recent years. In Chicago, homicides were down 31% to 278 through August, police data shows. Portland's homicides from January through June decreased by 51% to 17 this year, compared with the same period in 2024. In Portland, months of nightly protests at a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility continued on Tuesday night. In June, police declared a riot, and there have been smaller clashes since then. An appeals court has scheduled arguments for Thursday in the government's bid to deploy the Guard in Portland. Oregon Democratic Governor Tina Kotek said Tuesday she told Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem there's no insurrection in the state. Portland Police Chief Bob Day said Tuesday that the department needs to work more closely with federal agents as it looks to put more officers at the ICE facility. Noem told Fox News on Tuesday that she told Portland Mayor Keith Wilson that if the city did not boost security at the ICE building, get backup from local law enforcement, and take other safety measures, then we are going to send four times the amount of federal officers here. A federal judge in September said the administration willfully broke federal law by putting guard troops in Los Angeles over protests about immigration raids. And here is a local item entitled, Martin Elected CBAI First Vice Chairman. Goodfield. Chad Martin, President and CEO of Goodfield State Bank, was recently elected First Vice Chairman of the Community Bankers Association of Illinois. Martin was elected at the association's annual convention held last month in Kansas City, Missouri. In his role, he will serve on the CBAI Board of Directors as well as the Strategic Planning Committee, according to a news release. He also assists the CBAI Chairman and the Second Vice Chairman in various affairs for the association. Martin earned his Bachelor of Science degree in agribusiness from Illinois State University and is a graduate of the CBAI Community Bankers School in Bloomington and the Graduate School of Banking in Madison, Wisconsin. He started his career as a loan officer for the Bank of Gibson City and then transferred to Commerce Bank in Peoria as the Assistant Vice President and Commercial Loan Officer. He began working at Goodfield State Bank in 1999 as Vice President and Loan Officer. He was appointed President and CEO in 2002. He currently serves on the Community Bank Service Corporation Board and the CBAI MEP Oversight Committee. He is a past member of Community Bank Insurance Services. His civic duties include serving as past president of Roanoke Rotary Club and the Roanoke Benson Recreation Association, as well as serving on the board of directors of the Apostolic Christian Home of Roanoke, the news release said. Martin and his wife, Brenda, resident in Roanoke, are the parents of four sons, Austin, Brinley, Drew, Rebecca, Blake, Mallory, and Brock. They also have two granddaughters. CBAI is a professional trade association headquartered in Springfield. It was founded in 1974 to present and serve the community banking profession through effective advocacy, outstanding education, and high-quality products and services. CBAI has 240 members with more than $80 billion in assets and operate more than 1,500 locations statewide, according to a news release from CBAI. The next item is entitled, Threats to Kids Lead to Arrest, by Caitlin Klepek. Lincoln. Lincoln police have arrested an individual accused of making threats against juveniles at Lincoln Junior High School this week. The Lincoln Police Department received a report on Monday evening of threats being made against juveniles, encompassing threats made against Lincoln Junior High School, according to a news release. The threats were determined to have been made by one adult individual and were not made on any District 27 campus. Police conducted an investigation and had a suspect in custody by 10:38 p.m. Monday, the news release said. The district then informed all staff and parents of the situation and assured them that there were no further safety concerns at the school. The determination to deem the school safe of this threat or any other threat is not something the police department or District 27 staff take lightly, LPD stated in its news release. Many of our own children and our own family members attend schools within the district. The statement added that they would not have allowed students to return to school if there were still a threat of harm. The statement concluded by asking citizens to remain cautious about social media use, warning specifically about getting information from unreliable sources. Many of these people distribute misinformation and have very little or no factual knowledge. For trustworthy information, please refer to your official school communications. Every parent should be signed up to receive them, and they come in email, text, or voice call, the release said. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for October 9th. Please stay tuned.